You were saying?
Tell me what Yerushalmi says. Read me the Tanis and Yerushalmi at this point, and if it says this over there, then I'll keep a little more quiet. Maybe. But when I learn this in the Bavli, as I learn from you, maybe I'm picking up some superstitious Babylonian attitudes that were inculcated into Yiddishkeit at this point.
You know, I had intentions of learning all this from the Yerushalmi. And I have proof for it, written down. That last year when I decided on what I was going to learn, Tisha B'Av afternoon, last year, to choose for next year, I was intent on doing it from the Yerushalmi. But then I got a little lazy, and I wasn't going to type up or write out the translation myself. It doesn't exist, but I always want to put it in. So I took it from the Bavli. But I want to force you back to this thinking in very simple human terms. The facts are that when it comes to fears, when it comes to fears, I don't need astrological structures to make me think in such irrational ways. I know Bavel, and I know its effect on astrology. I know what effect Bavel and its astrology have had on us. Okay? I wish we never were in Bavel. Life would have been totally different for us and maybe a lot healthier in the 20th century if we didn't go through a Bavel experience. Okay? But that's stupidity, because at the same time Bavel created for us the Talmud Bavli. And when you look at Talmud Bavli in and of itself, how much astrology is there in relationship to hardcore, solid, intellectual formulation of halacha and of a derech ha-chaim, a way of life? It's so lopsided. How many times are there astrological references or what you call these bits of information, these statements, you know, derei ha-mazle, that you have bad luck and you have good luck? It's infinitesimal in comparison to the corpus of learning that you have inherited from Talmud Bavli. But what I'm saying to you is that what you're doing is correct. It is the same reaction that I have every time I walk by my old house, or I had up until now, realizing full well that most of the days that I went to school, I did not encounter Jimmy Ryan. Most. It's just those minority numbers of days that left this taste in my mouth, so that even long after I graduated and moved away, I still cringed every single time I saw that house, always imagining that Jimmy Ryan was going to come out. Now, I don't know where Jimmy Ryan is these days. I don't know what he is. I don't know if he's alive. But I'll tell you one thing. He sure as heck styled my life for the rest, for a long, long time. Because when I finally got a handle on saying that this is totally irrational, and if this does happen again, I've got to learn to take that Jimmy Ryan and flatten him dead on the spot before he can even lift a hand. That's a big tova that Jimmy Ryan did for me. What a favor.
My role model was Native Leadership class, where he quoted from the end of, I believe, Makos, by Rabbi Akiva laughing when he saw the Shu'al in the Beis HaMikdash.
Right.
And how Rabbi Akiva was concentrating on the future good that was going to occur, as opposed to his Rabban friends, who thought about the past. And that's Rabbi Akiva.
You know,
Rabbi Akiva's a role model.
Yes, but Rabbi Akiva was thinking of the same past that his colleagues were thinking of. There was only one thing, that their fixation stopped on the tragedy and the grief of the past. And he said, hey, why don't you just look one pasuk into the future? The next pasuk says that the same way the past validly occurred, that the future will be validated by renewal and regeneration and growth. They weren't capable of doing that yet. So what he was at a stage, he really was at a different stage of grief. They were in the stage of true despair, isolation, anger maybe, shock. And he was at a later stage of grief, which is acceptance. He accepted it. And by accepting the grief that indeed it's real, he had to accept the flip side of the coin, of the nevuah, that said, I'm going to rebuild. Siyom b'mishpati padeh. And the hundreds of psukim. Which, so the Rabbi Akiva model is surely the same model. That doesn't mean that they were not a correct model. They just hadn't progressed sufficiently in their grief process to be able to accept, you know, these what we know today as the five psychotherapeutic stages of grief. They just weren't yet there. He was beyond that. Rabbi Akiva didn't cry. Oh, he must have cried, and plenty. He wasn't devastated with depression at this incredible sight. Sure, he was devastated, but he moved on. Not all of us move at the same rate and develop at the same pace. Page 7. Let's continue. So we have established that the 9 days has an intensification of Avelus Dereya Mazlei. That somehow we have this feeling that in the 9 days we're going to get clobbered. Now, I'm skipping 5 lines because the Gemara only puts in statements that are totally unrelated to our topic, by also attributed to Rav Yehuda Brei de Rav Shmua Bashelas Mishmei de Rav. That's all. So those next 5 lines are totally irrelevant. 85. Our intensification of Avelus in the 9 days. Shabbos Shechol Tisha B'Av Liyos B'Socha Asurim L'Saper U'Lechabes. The Mishnah says that on Shabbos you're not allowed to take a haircut or you're not allowed to wash. Tell me, on Shabbos during Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos, you're allowed to take a haircut on Shabbos or wash? No. So what does Shabbos mean? It doesn't mean the day of Shabbos, but it means what? It is a synonym for the week, Shavuot. Shabbos is a synonym for the week. Shabbos Shechol Tisha B'Av Liyos B'Socha. That is not the pshat. I see your eyes already, Malachi. That's not the pshat. You wanted to say what? That on a day when Tisha B'Av occurs on Shabbos, that what? Erev Shabbos, you should be able to wash? That's not what it says. Okay? Shabbos means Shavua Shechol Tisha B'Av Liyos B'Socha. The week in which Tisha B'Av occurs is Asurin L'Saper L'Chabes. That's the din in the Mishnah. And by the way, that's the halacha. That is the halacha. I repeat again. If you're asking me, if you were to ask me the din, this washing of clothing, in other words, not wearing newly washed or pressed clothing, except that which touches your body, your undergarments, your shirt, anything that comes intact with the body, and this business of not shaving or not taking a haircut, what's the halacha? The halacha is Shavua Shechal Bo Tishba. That's it. And there really is no machlokas on that. There's no real machlokas. Hold on. Just a minute. Well, what you're saying is that the practice, the minhag, as opposed to the halacha, has got to be examined. I didn't reprint it here, but you can see it in the Aruch HaShulchan. Sfardim maintain the halacha of the Gemara. The halacha of the Gemara is simple. That Tisha B'Av this year came on what day? On Thursday? That means the last time you take a haircut is Friday, last Friday. So it's Shabbos, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 6 days. You don't take a haircut. The last time you wash your clothing or clean your clothing is last Friday. 6 days. That's it.
We're not from Rosh Chodesh.
Wait a minute. Because that's the halacha. The halacha is from Rosh Chodesh, Reya Mazle. And from the Shavua, Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, you intensify. I'll have something for you in a minute to try to understand that. But because we learned on this Daf Gemara that was the halacha, and Sfar didn't follow that halacha. Ashkenazim intensify far more the Avelis. We don't take a haircut, not from Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av. We start from where? From Shavuos Vatamis, but it's a minhag, not a din. Okay? We suspend all kinds of simcha, not from Mishenichnas of Mematim B'Simcha, but from when? From Shavuos HaBetamuz, especially when it comes to weddings and music, and I'll have a statement that, you know, I want to explore music with you in Yitz Hashem. We have collective strength about a whole halachic attitude towards music. That's Ashkenazim, but it's only Malachi, it's only with Minhag, by virtue of Minhag. So watch what happens. You have a Jew who has to decide between keeping his job or following this century-old Minhag. It's obvious that there's no reason in the world why you can't shave. It's obvious. It's obvious that there's no reason in the world why you can't take a haircut. Because the halacha says, not from Shavuot v'Tammuz, the halacha in Mishnah and in Gemara, and straight through was Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, the week of Tisha B'Av. Now, even further, the Aruch HaShulchan addressed another problem. We will soon see, a little further, that the eating of meat is restricted not from the Rosh Chodesh, the 9 days, like we Ashkenazim do, not from Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, in other words, from last Motzoi Shabbos, right? Just for 4 days. The halacha restricts meat and wine, do you know for how many days? 1 day. Erev Tisha B'Av. That's it. We'll soon see it. The fact that we extend it for 8 more days, well, actually, it's not 8 more days, because there's got to be a Shabbos in there, so you got Friday night that you can eat meat and Shabbos that you can eat meat. So we extend it for what? For 6 more days. The fact that we do that is only mitam minhag. And you know, people, give them, you know, Bernstein closes up. You should have seen what was doing. Moshe B. King closed up. You should have seen what's doing in New York. Tragedy of tragedies. Have you ever seen a drug addict who needed a fix and couldn't get a fix? Do you know how they run around? I'll take you on the east side, on East Houston Street over there, you'll see sometimes. That's the heart of drug addict land. How they run around until they get their supply, until they get their fix. This is the way people were running around by Bernstein. Oy vey, I can't get a Frankfurt. Oy vey, no egg rolls. Whatever it is, this is the way it was. These were national crises. And we have it in a microcosmic form with Barry Stein over here. The guy is tortured. Give the guy a fast day for 72 hours. It's easier than for him to give up his meat and potatoes on the 9 days, except for Shabbos. Much easier. Came over after davening, he said, look, for parnassah you can do anything. I'm going to be a food taster in a beef factory where they process beef. So at least for parnassah I'll be able to do it. If for parnassah I can go ahead and take a haircut until Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, the same thing I'm going to do to be able to taste the product, to sample the product. The guy is in agony. He's tortured. There are no two ways about it. But comes the Aruch HaShulchan and says, I don't care about your torture. Let me ask you something. This is the Aruch HaShulchan. He says, you know, by the Goyim, they give up for weeks. They give up meat. That's what? That's Lent. Lent for weeks they give up meat. In other words, the Fruma. If you're not Fruma, I can't talk to you. A Frum Goy, I can talk to you. Give up meat for weeks. And we, the Am Segula, the nation about whom it was written, Kedoshim Tihiyu, that we are Kodosh by virtue of what? By Krushim Tihiyu, by our ability to be able to control ourselves. And we go ahead and for 8 days you can't go ahead and give up meat. He says, he feels, and here's the Aruch HaShulchan, who's generally a Mekil, he feels that the violation is not a violation of Minhag. What a big deal. You have your Minhag, I have my Minhag. What? That makes me a Chote or Poshe? I don't follow your Minhag. He says, well, for Ashkenazim to resist this business of a healthy Ashkenazim under normal circumstances, to resist this business of eating meat, normal people, you know, to normal people who don't have to, you know, who don't have to feel that they're going down the tubes being deprived of meat, to violate this, he says, could be an Isra Daraisa. What is Daraisa? The Isra of Neder. Neder. That when a generation takes something on and it's passed on to the next door, and Doros continue to do something, that minhag, no matter how insignificant it is, becomes like a neder, for which you need hataras nedarim. And if you go ahead and break this vow, this oath, that has been collectively taken, then you're in trouble. Why do you think we have such great difficulty when 175 years ago in Germany, Achenu B'nai Yisrael, Jews, decided to reform certain practices. And among the first things that they reformed, not the most important, but among the first things that they reformed, was not to wear any head covering during davening. Now, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, I got to tell it to you straight, people. You look into Shulchan Aruch, the fact that we wear yarmulkes all the time is not a din, but is a midas chasidus. It is above and beyond the call of duty. You hear? Above and beyond the call of duty. And when our reform, so-called reform brethren, decided to take off the hat because that's the way Protestant, Lutheran Germany lived, and you were considered a barbarian if you did not tip your hat in the presence of someone, if you did not talk to him in the presence of someone holding your hat with a sense of humility, you were considered a barbarian when they went that route. So even though it was nothing more than a minhag chasidus, it was just above and beyond the call of duty. Not din! But minhag, we went bananas. You know why? Because this was a minhag shenistashet b'chol Yisrael. There was no Jew since the times of the Mishnah who didn't keep his head covered. Except under extraordinary circumstances, when it was mutar. But as a rule, your head was covered always as a sense of humility. To abrogate that is a d'oraisa. Which d'oraisa? The d'oraisa of neder, of oath, of shvuah. Time has imposed upon us an oath that we do this, and it's relatively insignificant.
Do you have a problem with chukas doing more than neder? I mean, if you're saying it's because of neder, then why wouldn't it be the same problem of doing changing chukas parnasa?
You see, chukos hagoy, if you want to clobber me on that, in chukos hagoy, that this is the way the goyim act, then you'd be on very difficult grounds. Chukos hagoy, the way goyim act, halachically is only binding when it has a certain religious dimension to it. And the only time that something that has no religious dimension to it is nonetheless stayed away from, that's al kisod misana, that's when we're under the oppressive thumb of a goy to culturally defect. So then, if in your sneakers you wear red laces because goyim do it that way, then you are considered breaking the chukas hagoy, because we've got to show massive resistance to what is going on. A dear personality in my life is Rabbi Avigdor Miller. Before I was a young Israel rabbi, so I was a young Israel president, and he was the young Israel rabbi. Huh? All right, well, I was the president of Rabbi Avigdor Miller Shul when we lived in Brooklyn before having come here. And we became extraordinarily close as a result of it. He's a dear personality. At that time, I worked with NCSY. Worked with kids. Hashpa. Take none from kids, you try to show them the light and the way and reconstitute a life and ultimately a family and who knows how many others. He came to me and he once gave me an unsolicited Musa Shmuz. That time, the style was the mini skirt. And it was, you know, it was mini. By the way, it's coming back now. It's 20 years. The cycle has gone full swing and now minis are full blown. He told me, he says, I want you, Reb Chaim, I know you travel the country, and you have the life of so many thousands of kinderlach in your hand. Those of you who have heard him know that that's the way he talks. I want you to be careful with this. Not that you get them to give up the minis. You've got to convince the girls and their boyfriends that the girls should wear skirts down to their ankles. Why? Because we have to resist me'akotze alakotze. You have to go to the opposite extreme. And especially during the summertime, when things get hot, when the minis are more in full bloom than any other time. Wintertime, people want to be cold. Girls don't want to freeze. So maybe they put on more clothing instead. Summertime is the time. Now, that's when there's an open war, there is an open battle. So even if there's nothing wrong, all right, there's a fallacy in my reasoning here. Mini is an act of tznius, okay? But even if there were nothing wrong, he would say, and this thinking would say, even if skirts are chveis vos till the knees and beyond the knees for an inch, but if it's fashion that is imposed upon us to dilute our Torah heritage, then you've got to go to the other extreme. It's not chukas hagoy, it is resistance. Here, in the case of yarmulke, I cannot come to chukas hagoy. You know why? Because you cannot impose upon, you have to start from the halachic point. The halachic point, covering your head at all times, is only midas chasidus. Meaning that the norm was that at certain times, you have no problem with uncovering your head. Yes, when you eat in your office, you have to have a yarmulke. Yes, when you daven, mahotzi shem shemayim, sense of humility is brought on by the symbol of yarmulke. Agreed. But that need not necessarily be so if you're riding in your car, or if you're sitting at home and you're sewing, whatever, or writing, and it's not divrei Torah. Understand what I'm saying? It's just not. You can't argue that a midas chasidus violates a chukas hagoy. If it were the din, then that's a different story. But here, what was going on in the Reform times was no question about it that they were reaching out with a peace treaty, with a proposal to say, please accept me as a human being. I am a human being. You think of me up until now as an elephant man, but I really am a human being. I'll be happy to live and walk the way you want to show you that I am a human being, which was an absurdity.
Going back to what you said, though, about being over on Neda, why are you...
Zior Hashul? No, no. That's the way he formulates.
Right. But in general, why certain things are allowed for Parnassa?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't there be a problem with Neder in the case where... Are they opposing each other?
No, for the same reason that the Gemara says when it comes to Pikuach Nefesh is Chalel Shabbat Zu, go ahead and break this Shabbos so you can keep other Shabbosos. We understand in this war for Parnosa that certain things have to give, otherwise you will not be having a Parnosa. And if you won't have a Parnosa, how are you going to be able to be a Jew?
Exactly. Why can't you extend it to Shabbos?
What do you mean, why can't you?
Where do you stop? Where do you draw the line?
Where do you draw the line? Every generation draws a line at the point of where you feel integrity is not lost. Chilul Shabbos was a loss of integrity. However, Midas Chasidus is not a loss of integrity.
But if it has a quality of a neder?
Oh, okay, I hear what you're saying. I really hear what you're saying. So the question is on the Aruch HaShulchan. He who generally is, you look at the Aruch HaShulchan vis-a-vis the Mishnah Berurah, the Aruch HaShulchan is a Mekil, vis-a-vis the Mishnah Berurah who is a Machmir. Here he wasn't interested in being a Mekil. I wish I could talk to him about it. However, my gut reaction is, Jew, there is a certain integrity that you sacrifice. We know that by definition, you are a Kedoshim Tihiyu. You are capable of refraining from things for great periods of time. You don't smoke all Shabbos. You smoke 3 packs a day, 6 days a week. How is it that your brain is capable of telling you for 25 hours minus a quarter that I don't need a cigarette? And if you need a cigarette, you're able to function in such a way so as to overcome. But on Yom Tov you can't. On Tisha B'Av you can only go to Chatzos. How is it? 52 Shabbosos out of the year you're able to do it. Can't do it a couple of more days. Now this is what he is saying. The integrity of Kedoshim Tihiyu is probably at stake in his mind, and that's why he formulated it. So the only way that you can find a halachic rationale for trying to get you not to eat meat is to say, my God, You have to say Kol Nidre for this. This is one of the Nidorim that you know, you say Erev Rosh Hashanah, you go rushing. Shimon Aram Bosai, we're going to say Hataras Nidorim now, Kol Neder Rishvua, V'Yisov, Kol Nemecharov, you know, Shosarti, that's me, everything. You know, and Minog Shenahakti, Minog Tova Shenahakti, Shalosh Kolamim. Something that I did three times, Velo Hisnei Sibo, and I didn't give the mental condition that Sheyeh Beli Neder, that I wasn't going to let it have the effect of a binding Neder. And here for generations, hundreds upon hundreds of years, this goes back to be up before the Rishonim, maybe the times of the Baal HaTosfos, that we have not been eating meat, that we've been putting away the sakin shchita, the chalaf, and shochtim, don't slaughter. You're sick? You gotta eat meat. You're weak? And the doctor tells you need that protein and there's no other available? You gotta eat meat.
Could
Hadaras and Tarim work for this? Bingo. Don't you hear the anger in him? What kind of Hadaras and Tarim? It won't work. It won't work. I'll tell you where it'll work. Become a Sfaradi.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
But I want Havaras Sfaradit, and I want your kitnias on Pesach, and I want everything. I mean, you make sure that your tefillin are Sfarad, and your mezuzahs are Sfarad, and the other one. You know, but we don't do these things. We go minag avoseinu biyadeinu. So how you cannot, with Hataras Nedarim, take away this vital aspect of our existence called minag avos, the force of minag that has been for generations, especially when it's not a minag shtus, when it's not stupidity. And you know that we got some stupid ones, you know, unless you want to be blind. Rabbeinu Tam uses minag shtus. I've been cataloging. My family also relishes every time we see the word minhag or the word chumrah. I have a full file that I've been collecting for years just on these two words, minhag and chumrah. And how many times minhag shtus or chumrah yisera, this is going overboard, way overboard. And I relish this, but you're not going to push me into the corner, Yaakov, and say that with Hataras Nedarim, I can go ahead and wipe off, my God, close to a millennium, close to 1,000 years. Yeah, if I'm not aware of what I'm doing in anger, I go ahead and take a nether upon myself, I'm never going to do. Or, you stepped on my toes, I will never step into your house. And then all of a sudden, you know, I should have some hanor from you, or whatever. Whatever the case may be. So then you go, you make Hataras Nedarim. Hataras Nedarim, which is so problematic to begin with, the Gemara says. It's such a problematic halachic problem, mechanism, I mean to say. But nonetheless, Hataras Nedarim, so we look for rationales for why you can get out of a neder, because you didn't mean it. If you knew circumstances were different, you wouldn't have said it. You weren't dealing with a full deck at the time. Your marbles were around. But this... How can you do this for so many hundreds and hundreds of years?
What does Kol Nidre refer to?
Oh, you're not allowed to learn Torah on Tisha B'Av.
Okay. That's a good way to get out of it. Okay.
Look, your questions are devastating. They are more than monographs, each in its own right. But just to give you a... some which way, what is Kol Nidre then? Okay, wait a minute. Kol Nidre. Kol Nidre and Hataras Nedarim are highly problematic in Halacha. You must be aware of the fact that in the times of the Gaonim, the two major yeshivas, Muncie and Lakewood,
yeah,
right? The two major yeshivas refused to say Kol Nidre because halachically, what are we doing here? And therefore, Rabbeinu Tam, when he got a hold of the Kol Nidre, he changed its text. You know when you change a text, when you have problems halachically. There's nothing that you have to change in Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, because there are no problems halachically. All right? That's all. But there are problems. However, you know, I want you to imagine. Can you imagine my walking in and telling the young Israel Gaboyim, this year we have 9 weeks to Kol Nidre. This year, no Kol Nidre. We are going back Chadesh Yomenu Kekedem to the days of Sura and Pumpadisa, because Rav Sadia Gaon didn't say Kol Nidre, the Rambam probably didn't say Kol Nidre, and Rav Hai Gaon probably didn't say Kol Nidre, the yeshivish way. We're going back to that. Tell me, Josh, what do you think they would do to me?
Hang
me.
Okay.
No, the Gaboim? The Gaboim probably would bring... They would bring a straitjacket. They would bring a straitjacket and send me to St. Mary's today! Today! They wouldn't wait till tomorrow. Shigas! Kol Nidre! But that's the problem. Let's go. So, up until now, let's review. The first stage of Avelus is when? Beginning with Shivasa B'Tammuz. The second intensified stage of Avelus is? Rosh Chodesh Av. The third, yet more intensified stage of Avelus is? Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, or the way the Mishnah says, Shabbos Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av.
Yeah, that means the whole Shavua, or just until the Shavua.
Until and including Tisha B'Av. Wait a minute, hold on. Whoa. Wait. More intensified than Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av is yet what? And we have to learn it, is Erev Tisha B'Av. Then Tisha B'Av itself is the finale, and then we slowly wane after Tisha B'Av. You don't go cold turkey, but you slowly wane tonight, and a little more tomorrow, until, you know, with Erev Shabbos, it goes faster. But until Chatzos tomorrow, technically, if it wasn't Shabbos.
Now,
yeah, no.
Tuesday, Wednesday.
Tuesday, if Tisha B'Av is on Monday.
Okay.
Tuesday is the 10th.
Okay. Tuesday is
the
10th.
Come on, no.
What about Wednesday?
Come on.
Shabbat Shechal Bo.
Add. Shabbat Shechal Bo. Just a minute. Shabbat Shechal Bo, Tisha B'Av, v'gamal. The Gemara later on once asks your question. Does it mean the full week? Or does it mean until then? And we see, we have Machlokes, and we'll see what's what. You know, it's not so clear. Wait a minute, I have a point here. Avelus for our national disasters and catastrophes start out on a lower level, and they intensify, right? Until Tisha B'Av, we hit the pinnacle, we hit the top, and then the pressure is relieved. Okay? No, but I'm not here with Sphira. I'm only here with Avelu Shechal Val Tisha B'Av, that Tisha B'Av mandates. There is a basic difference between national Avelus and personal Avelus that I keep on repeating for you. The grief intensifies as you go on. In individual Avelus, of Chas V'Sholem, you have individual Avelus. When you become an Avel, the first stage is what? Is the first day of Avelus, the first day of Shiva, which is the most difficult. Then the second period is up to 3 days, which have less difficulties in the second and the third day than the first. Then from day 4 to 7 in Shiva, there are less things that may be problematic. Then from Shiva to Shloshim, the Avelus diminishes. And if it's apparent from Shloshim to Yud Beis Chodesh, the Avelus continues to wane and diminish. So when it comes to the individual Avelus that a person observes, Halacha sets up a model of from high peak intensity to a very low level reminder. And the curve constantly curves downward. When it comes to national Avelus, you go ahead and you intensify. Furthermore, there's another small distinction that has to be made between national Avelus and individual Avelus. There is no din of chinuch, of educating minors to individual Avelus. Understand? There's no din. You don't get them started early, so to speak.
So why doesn't
matter? Wait a minute. Whoa. In national Avelus, you go ahead, and minors I'll slowly but surely introduce. What were you saying? Why does a...
Does a minor whose parent passed away, does he halachically have to observe any avelis?
Does he halachically have to observe any avelis? And the answer is, from a pure halachic perspective, the answer is no. However, there are certain things that we do. We go over to him and we tear Kriya with him, not from a point of view of Avelis, okay? But from a point of view of people, adults, seeing this child having a torn lapel, conjuring up their compassion. Yosom ve'almona ye'oded. You see. So that we and our hearts can be broken that this 10-year-old kid doesn't have a father with whom to grow up.
But it almost makes sense. The tragedy started on Tisha B'Av, but that wasn't the entire horrible thing that happened. It was when the base metals were destroyed. If the base metals were destroyed on Shabbat Shabbat Tammuz, they came right in and immediately went over and burned it down and did whatever, wouldn't we then follow the personal model in that case? There was no introduction to it and it got worse and worse. A person dies on a given day, and then we have Muslim tense mourning. Yeah, if our model would be we started when he got a heart attack 10 months before, and he gradually built up to the day he died, then the personal one might be like the national model. It's a different...
Same.
So, on the same idea, maybe also the national one, it's not when it occurred, it's more as a remembrance of what happened. Yeah, but to remember something, you have to build up to remember it. You can't just come in from one day, everything's fun, and then the next day you're going to have Tisha B'Av, and then have the 3 weeks afterwards. It makes more sense to build up to Tisha B'Av. Well, if at the time it occurred, even on a national tragedy, at the time of a tragedy, then it would probably also go that as time would make you forget a bit more and the pain would diminish.
Let me just reformulate it the way I would say it, but I'm saying nothing different than what Rabbi Yaakov is saying. It seems to me that when you participate in your own tragedy, when you have your personal sense of irreversible loss, there's no way in the world that you can build up to something. You're in the midst of that turmoil, you are in the depths of the shadows of the valley of death. Can't go any lower. The only thing you can do is decrease that grief process. But I want to paint this picture for you of Tisha B'Av in your model, and let's reverse it. Okay? Let's take Shivaso B'Tammuz and put it 3 weeks after Tisha B'Av. Okay? Let's start with Tisha B'Av. Boom! And then slowly decrease until Shivaso B'Tammuz. Can I ask you something? Do you honestly think that there'll be a chance in a million that we will be able to get people who are otherwise frum to observe this kind of waning of avelus, with Tisha B'Av starting first and then going less and less and less? Or would the case be that the minute Tisha B'Av is over, straight up to the homowak, that's it, it's all over, I got a heter for everything, for swimming, instead of not swimming, for meat, instead of milchiks, we wouldn't have a chance to be able to observe anything. I could conceive of the most cockeyed kinds of shilas for dispensations that would immediately result the day after Tisha B'Av. You say no?
I don't.
This is the remembrance kind of a situation.
Yeah. It falls on a Sunday, or I would fast day. I don't know about Shabbos or the Thomas. We fast on that day, yet, again, I don't remember what they go, whether it's Shabbos or the Thomas, or I'm getting with some other fast days. Yet, softball might still go on, or other things go on. We follow it because it's a minhag to do it, it's a halacha to do it, or whatever. We're doing it because we were trained to do it, not because... I mean, why go through this big, intense fasting on Shabbat Shabbat Tammuz, then go down? It was not morning, but it was fasting anyway. It was like the morning.
some of our mind.
I mean,
we're doing it because it's a habit to do it.
My personal perception of what we Jews are today, and I'm speaking about, you know, middle class from America, is that, can you imagine if Rosh Hashanah came after Yom Kippur? No one would be around. No one. So you got to start easy. You start by shaking people up a little on Rosh Hashanah, but there's no fasting. You'll eat, you'll drink, you go to Tashlich, don't sleep, spend your time, you know. Then we'll wet your whistle with a Tzom Gedalia the next day. You know, so it's what? Tzom Gedalia is no more than about 12, 13 hours. It's not 25 hours. It's half the fast. Tzibislach, slowly but surely, and then all of a sudden the meat has been tenderized for the big day, for the Yom HaKodesh. You know? We would do it the other way around. It's just impossible. I don't know. I'm not a barbecue expert, but it seems to me that a steak has to be barbecued slowly but surely, turned over on both sides. Can't go and take a butane torch at 900 degrees and put it to the steak and say you're going to have an instant steak. It just don't go, man. You got to soften it up. We're a piece of meat. We're a behemoth. We're bulls in china shops. We're without personality and integrity. We like the soyer amishtaleach. We're a bunch of goats falling for anything because we stand for nothing. You got to slowly but surely, you know, soften up, tenderize, meat tenderizer. And I don't see it happening your way. Mamish, Rosh Hashanah would be, can you imagine, you sell your seats for Yom Kippur, there'll be no one here Rosh Hashanah, you'll have more people on a Shabbos, on Shabbos Shira than you would have on Rosh Hashanah. They're out in bungalows, they're out vacationing, you know, they'll extend the bungalow period till after Labor Day, just leave for Yom Kippur, come back to Chishul, and then go right back and finish. In Rosh Hashanah they'll spend on the lawn and in the Catskills or in the Poconos. That's it, and all of a sudden, you know, someone will go around, the Pied Piper will go around and blow shofar on the lawn by the pool, you know, in the casino. I'm telling you, I feel it that way. We wouldn't have a chance in the world if we don't just slowly but surely build up to it. Not a chance. Malachi, for the record, was correct when he asked. Take a look at line 109. Omar Rav said, Lo Shanu Elalafanov, the restrictions of Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av were meant only for the days before Tisha B'Av. Avol La'acharov, but the days after Tisha B'Av is Muta. And you see there a little footnote, the hay, and that's to the Rambam, that's the way we pass him. But Shmuel Omar, Shmuel had indicated, afilu la'acharov name osu, even afterwards, you're not allowed to do in that week what you are restricted in doing before that week. Okay, so what he was asking is without question, halachically valid, it only happens to be a machlokis between Rav and Shmuel. But we don't paskin like Shmuel, in this case we paskin like Rav. Let's go to the next page, page 8, line 134. Page 134. I'm sorry, line 134. Erev Tisha B'Av, lo yochal adam beis tafshilich. On Erev Tisha B'Av, a person shouldn't eat two cooked foods. Are you allowed to do that in the other 9 days? There's no problem. But again, we're on the process of intensifying our avelus. During the 3 weeks, you can eat seven cooked foods at the same time if you want. Here, the Mishnah says that on Erev Tisha B'Av, don't eat two cooked foods together. Omar Rav Yehuda explains this Mishnah by saying, Lo shanu elo mishesha usulamala. What we are talking about is after Chatzos, which yesterday was 101, as it is today. After after Chatzos, don't sit down to a full meal. That's what's being said. Soup. Gefilte fish. Pheasant under the glass. Okay? Don't. It doesn't say don't eat. But to think that you're going to sit down to a full meal, a full course meal, that night. Again, because of the Avelis. Avol, says Rav Yehuda, Mishesha Osu Lamata, in the morning, before noon, is Mutar. There's no problem with that. Omar Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda said further, I want you to understand that this two cooked foods, afternoon, is also limited. Lo Shonu Elo B'Seudah HaMapsikba. The only time that you're not allowed to eat two cooked foods is in the Seudah HaMapsekes, the final meal before the fast. However, even if it was afternoon, Avol B'Seudah She'eino MapsikBa is Muta. In the Seudah that you don't expect to be the last and final Seudah. You ate 2 o'clock, but you're yet going to eat. Last night the fast started at 5 to 8. You're yet going to eat B'Seudah HaMapsekes, that final thing. That and only there are you going to be restricted because of Avelus and not eat 2 tafshilim. So you know what the minhag is. Go ahead and eat an egg, eat something, a bagel. You want to see the intensified kind of Avelus on Erev Tisha B'Av. Let's pick it up at line 149. Tanya Kalishna Kama, I'm skipping the first version. There are two versions of this halacha. I'm skipping, as I told you before, because to intensify our Torah learning in depth, it may be outside the realm of Tisha B'Av. Informational Torah learning is muta. But Erev Tisha B'Av, lo yochal adam shnei tafshilin. On Erev Tisha B'Av, as we learned before, this particular brisa says, you don't eat two cooked foods. Also, lo yochal basar, on Erev Tisha B'Av, you don't eat meat. The lo yishtei yayin, and you don't go ahead and drink wine. Now that's the reason that I wanted to pick it up here. That the eating of meat and the drinking of wine is only osar al pidin on Erev Tisha B'Av. That we extend it for 8 additional days, that's a different story. Totally different story. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel adds in this brisa and says that whichever way you eat, for the point of the symbolism of Avelus, is Yishaneh. You've got to change the regular way in which you eat. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, to which Rabbi Yehuda asks, Ketzad Mishaneh, how do you go ahead and change the regular way that you eat? Is it if you eat with a fork that you use a spoon? If you eat with a knife, you don't use a knife? What do you do? Okay? Answers Rabbi Yehuda. Im ha-yaragil lechol shnei tafshilim. If normally you sit down on any given day to eat a full meal, is yochal min echad. Eat a truncated meal, a partial meal. If normally you sit and there's a whole entourage sitting around your table, and therefore you can bench Nevarech Elokeinu Shechalom Mishalo, today, so eat b'chamisha. Don't have 10, eat with 5. So if you go ahead and drink 10 cups a day of whatever it is, drink less. And obviously, we would have to say that it is a beverage that has a chashivus. That the change indicates a certain deprivation, and you feel it. When are we talking about all of these changes? From noon and afterwards, from after Chatzos. But from 6 hours before noon, in other words, the morning, is Mutar. Again, I want to clearly emphasize in your mind that the din and the minhag, when it comes to the 3 weeks, at least as far as we Ashkenazim are concerned, are two different worlds. Totally two different worlds. No two ways about it.
Is it in preparation for the fast or as an increasing of the Avelus?
Intensification of Avelus. And it happened in Ashkenaz, I'll tell you why clearly. It happened in Ashkenaz, because in Ashkenaz, not only were we clobber, but whenever we speak of Christianity in Ashkenaz, we remember that these are the spiritual and cultural inheritors of who? Of Rome, who destroyed our second base on the English. The same Turnus Rufus, the same Titus, the same Hadrian who did us in the second century, when, right? Those, his successor is the Prince of Peace in Vatican, the Pope, right? So we Ashkenazim have a symbolic burn that may be far deeper than all the insanity that the Sfaradim suffered at the hands of this Meshulamah called Mohammed and his Islamic tradition. In fact, the historians do look, when you look objectively as an outsider and want to know who suffered more, was it Ashkenaz or Sfarad? Somehow we Ashkenazim got clobbered more than Sfarad. It wasn't a picnic under the Arabs, no two ways about it. I mean, the Rambam and his family had to run when Arabic attitudes, when Muslim attitudes changed. And in the main, I mean, you were a second-class citizen. What's there to talk about? You couldn't ride on a donkey. You're a Jew. You couldn't wear leather if you were a Jew, because you are a hybrid. You're some midpoint. But if you were to take a choice whether you wanted to live as a Sfaradi or an Ashkenazi in the last two millennia, you would definitely want to be a Sfaradi, without question. So we react with the intensity of what indeed we suffered. Can't eat meat? Go to the bottom. 174. Four lines from the bottom. Lo yachal basar v'lo yishtei.